We continue the Shi'ur in Gemara. We're going to take a number of stories from various places in the Gemara and Medrashim throughout Shas and Medrash, and we're going to tie them to one single story with a direct sequence. Some of these will just be reminders so that you'll understand the essence of the story as we go along. First, we know that Rabbi Akiva was the greatest rabbi that ever lived next to Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember, the Midrash says that there's a pasuk in the Torah, "V'lod kam navi od kamoshe." There never arose a prophet again, there never will be a prophet as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. But chacham kamoshe kam. But one, a chacham, a wise rabbi as learned as Moshe Rabbeinu, there did arise one, and that was Rabbi Akiva. That's how great he was. And yet, there was a vast difference between the two in the method of their passing. Moshe Rabbeinu's histalkut, his passing, was called mitat neshika, the kiss of death, where kaviyachol, the Gemara says, that Hashem kissed him, and with this, he drew his neshama from him. This was the passing of Moshe Rabbeinu. But that wasn't all. In addition, the burial of Moshe Rabbeinu was done by Hashem himself. The Torah tells us that Hashem himself buried Moshe Rabbeinu without any human being taking part in this. Therefore, the grave of Moshe Rabbeinu remains hidden from any person till this day. No one can find his grave. Though we have the geographical description of where to find it, no person has ever located the exact spot of the grave of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, on the other hand, let's take the case of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was pursued, harassed by the Roman government, the Roman king, who had issued a decree that no rabbi is allowed to teach Torah at that time. Despite this decree, Rabbi Akiva assembled his students, taught Torah, and he was caught by the Roman government and sentenced to death. But his death sentence was not a simple one. The Gemara says he was tortured. It was a death of very horrible type of torture, where they used steel combs to rip his flesh from him, and a long series of painful procedures took place before finally his soul left him and he passed away. He was saying Kriyat Shema at the time. He dragged it out so that it would last until the moment that he passed away. This took a long time. He suffered a great deal of torture. And finally, when he passed away, remember that his body was not intact. It wasn't the same as a regular person that passes away. His body was, bar minan, torn to shreds. So it wasn't simple to bury him. At the same time, the Jews were afraid to bury him because of the fact that he had been killed by the Roman government, and their decree consisted of the death penalty for him by torture, and that the stigma remained that he could not be buried. And so Rabbi Akiva remained without being buried, not with an honorable burial like Moshe Rabbeinu, the most honorable burial in existence, but without any burial at all, till a period of time later, which we'll get to. That's one item. Let's go back to a different item. The Gemara says that one day, Rabbi Akiva, who was a student in the yeshiva of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, one day he came late. His rabbis were very concerned because they considered him a prize student. And they asked him, "Why were you late to yeshiva today?" And he said, "Because I was occupied in the performance of a major mitzvah. A mitzvah that is so important, as I had learned, this mitzvah is even more important than the study of Torah." What mitzvah is that? The mitzvah of mit mitzvah. Mit mitzvah means that if a corpse is found somewhere in the forest, in the woods, there's nobody there to bury him, the mitzvah of burying him is so great that even a kohen, who cannot go near a dead body, go to the funeral of only his seven relatives, parents, brother and sister, son and daughter, and wife, a Kohen can himself bury this bet mitzvah. Not only that, the Gemara says still more, that even a Kohen Gadol, who is forbidden to go to the funeral of his seven relatives, he cannot attend the funeral of his own parent, he too is permitted to partake in this mitzvah of burying this corpse who has no one to care for him. Rabbi Akiva said, the reason I came late because I found a body in the woods and I decided to give this body the proper burial. I picked up this body, placed it on my shoulders, and I carried it all the way from the woods to the city, and there I gave it a burial that was fitting for it. How great a mitzvah I performed. His rabbi said to him, for every step that you took, you committed a crime that's nearly as bad as murder, because the law is that a met mitzvah kaneh mikomo. Wherever the corpse is lying, that piece of land, that ground, becomes his without paying for it. Becomes his ground, he owns it, and he must be buried right there where he's found. When the land was given to the Jews, Eretz Yisrael was given to the Jews to be divided by them, a stipulation was made, a condition, that the land belongs to the Jews, divided among the 12 tribes. But every inch of land has a condition attached to it, that if there is a net mitzvah found on that property, he becomes the owner of those 6 feet of land. He's to be buried right there where he's found. Therefore, they said to Rabbi Akiva, you walked with this body from the woods to the city. Every step you carried him away from that place, you committed a crime. Rabbi Akiva said, from that time I learned never to stray from my rabbis. Stay close to them, to learn, to listen deeply, because you never know. You think you're performing a mitzvah, and it turns out to be the most serious of sins. Now we come to the third part. Here the Gemara we're up to tells us a story. That one day, Rabbi Bar Avuha, a certain rabbi, and this story took place in Babel, where the Amoraim were located. He was once walking along, he came to a cemetery, and he met Eliyahu Hanavi at the cemetery. We know that the rabbis of the Gemara were very worthy. They were zocheh to see Eliyahu Hanavi in person. He would come to many of the rabbis, study Torah with them, just as he did with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Those who were deserving saw him personally. They studied Torah with him. They had that immeasurable zechut. Rabbi Avuha was one of those who was deserving. He saw Eliyahu Hanavi, who ordinarily would be invisible to any other type of person. And he asked him certain questions in halacha, and then he said to him, aren't you a Kohen? Because we have a klal, a general rule, information, that Eliyahu Hanavi is Pinchas. Pinchas, the grandson of Aharon HaKohen, the Pasuk says that he was Mekaneh Kinat Hashem. He avenged the honor of Hashem by killing Zimri, who was committing a crime, an illicit crime with a woman, a Goya, and he killed Zimri and this woman. This was performing a Kiddush Hashem. We find the same words by Eliyahu Hanavi when he said, Kano Kineti, I want to avenge the honor of Hashem against those Jews who are worshipping idols. The Zohar Kadosh says, we learn from here that Eliyahu Hanavi is Pinchas. It's the very same person. In fact, we mentioned once, we'll add this point, to prove this, that Arizal says that, according to the Zohar Kadosh, Aharon HaKohen's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, died. We just had this in last week's parasha. They died in the Beit HaMikdash when they brought a sacrifice in a wrong manner, and this caused their death. A fire came from the Holy of Holies and destroyed them, not the bodies, just the neshama. They passed away. And then it says that, there's a pasuk later on which says, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon HaKohen. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, period, the son of Aaron HaKohen, which means that Pinchas was the son of Aaron HaKohen, not the grandson. The Zohar HaKadosh says, what's meant here is that Nadav and Avihu, aside from the reasons the Gemara gives for their death, they brought a wrong type of sacrifice, they brought fire of their own for the sacrifice, or because they drank intoxicating beverage before they went into the Beit HaMikdash wine, or because of other reasons, the reason that they died was, the Zohar HaKadosh says, because they were not married. The person who's not married is not considered a complete person. He's called a plag guf, a half of a person. Since they were only a half of a person, the Pasuk says, Adam ki yakriv korban, Adam, a person, must bring a korban. They were not a person, half person only. Therefore, they got the death penalty for coming into the Beit HaMikdash with a korban that was illegal. Now, when Pinchas performed this great act of Kiddush Hashem, the Zohar HaKadosh says that as a reward, he received the combination that was fused into him through heaven, both the souls, both the neshamot of Nadav and Avihu. He inherited both souls. His own singular soul left him. He received these two major souls. Major soul because the Torah says, Bikrovai Akadesh. That these two were very, very holy neshamot, sons of Aaron HaKohen. When they passed away, their souls left them. Now Pinchas inherited these two souls. How could one person inherit two souls? Rabbi Shmuel ben Yechiyahu says, because these two were, as we said, half. They were not married. They were considered half souls each. Together, they made up one soul. This is what Pinchas got. Rabbi Yechiyahu says, now we can very clearly understand that when the time came for Eliyahu Navi to pass away, his very close disciple, his closest student, Elisha HaNavi, accompanied him. And Eliyahu Navi said to Elisha HaNavi, make one request to me and I'll grant you. Elisha HaNavi said, my request is, Vihina Pishnayim Bruchacha Elai. Let me have double your power. Eliyahu Navi said, you've hikshet alishol. You have made a very difficult request. I have to give you double my power. First, you can give as much as he's got, not double. Still, you'll receive it. If you see me leaving you, you receive that, your request. You'll have it fulfilled. But Ezal says, note the words, Vihina, let there please be, Pishnayim, double, twice, Baruch HaCha, of your spirit, a light to me. But Ezal says, here's the secret in those words are, you are, Elisha Navi said to Eliyahu Navi, you are actually Pinchas. You have received the two neshamot of Nadav and Avihu. I ask that you now transfer this greatness of soul, of spirit, to me. Vihina Pishnayim, this two, this double, these two souls, Baruch HaCha, of your spirit, you have two instead of one, a lie to me. Which two? Vihi Na. Na is not meant as pleased there, but Na is Nun Aleph, Nadav Avihu, which are Pishnayim Baruch HaCha, double, spirit within you, give them to me. So here we see, as the Nizal brings it, Zohar HaKadosh, that Eliyahu Navi was Pinchas. Right now we're concerned with one point. The question was that he was asked now by Rav Baravuha was, you are a Kohen, because you are Pinchas. As a Kohen, what are you doing in a cemetery? How is a Kohen permitted to enter into a cemetery? The Gemara says, Eliyahu Navi answered him with a question, surprised question. Haven't you learned Mishnayot? Haven't you learned there are six divisions of Mishnayot. Six divisions are, the first is Zira'im, one that deals with vegetation. Primarily, of course, what about vegetation? This means the Terumah, the Ma'aseh, that a person must give from his crops. He must give 1/50th to the Kohen, 1/10th to the Levi, 1/10th to bring to Yerushalayim, 1/10th to give to the poor, and so on. All these laws of taking off percentages from his crops are found in the Mishnayot of Zira'im, vegetation. Plus, of course, certain other rules as far as vegetation goes, like Kilayim. The second, third, fourth, and fifth are Moed, that's holidays, Nashim, matters dealing with marriage, Nizikim, damages or court cases, Kodashim, are Korbanot, different sacrifices brought in the Beit HaMikdash. The last one is Taharot. Taharot which means pure, deals with the laws of tum'ah, things that make a person tameh. Person who touches a dead body or a dead rodent becomes tameh. There we have, too, all the laws of which items can bring about this tum'ah. So Leonavi asked Abadavuha, haven't you learned the sixth division which deals with the laws of tum'ah? There, it explicitly states that goyim, when they die, are not tameh. They are not impure. They cannot cause impurity. It's only the dead body of a Jew that has this impurity. Dead body of a goy, once he dies, is as though he disappeared. There is nothing left to him. Now, this is a cemetery of goyim. So, what is wrong with my being here? The cemetery of goyim is pure as far as the laws of tumah. As a kohen, I'm not doing anything wrong. But it's still surprising that you ask a question like this. Haven't you learned this simple fact in the laws of the division of Taharot? Abba Ravua answered, you speak about the laws of Taharot. We have four divisions that pertain to us. The laws of holidays, laws of marriage, laws of court cases, even the laws of sacrifices, which every Jew must know about. Mashiach comes. These are the four we must learn, and even those four, he said, I'm very weak in. How do you expect me to have knowledge in the other two, the laws of vegetation, which pertain to Eretz Yisrael? We haven't got the laws of Trumah and Maaser outside of Israel, and the laws of Trumah, we haven't got that either now. It's only the time of Bet HaMikdash, we had the Med Cow, the purity. So Leonavi asked him, why do you say you're weak, even in those four? Don't you learn? Abba Ravua said, I'm sorry to admit that I spend very little time on learning because I'm very poor. I must work very hard to earn a meager living for myself and my family. Barely eke out a living, I live as a pauper. I wish I could spend much more time on learning. I cry over the fact that I don't have the zechut, the wealth, richness, and time. Leonavi said, I sympathize with you. And I'm going to help you. The Gemara says that Leonavi took him, he led him to Gan Eden, and there he said to him, take the edge of your coat, the end of your coat, and hold it up so that it becomes a form of a receptacle to receive things in there. Hold it up, and he said, now I will fill this with flowers. Flowers from the Garden of Eden, from Gan Eden. These flowers contain a very special type of smell. Imagine the Reach of Gan Eden. The aroma of Gan Eden is so rich that it's priceless as far as being used in this world. A person who can afford it would pay any price for a drop of, just to get an idea of the smell of Gan Eden. So here's a whole pack of flowers. Hold your coat out, and I'll put it in this as you fold your coat over so you can receive it. Go with these flowers, sell them, you'll be a very wealthy man, and you can sit and study Torah. He took these flowers, and as he walked out of Gan Eden, he suddenly heard a voice, a heavenly voice coming from there, and said, here's one case, one person who has received all his reward from Gan Eden at one time. Abba Baravuha has just taken all his reward, his future reward from Gan Eden, he's used it all up. When he heard this, he became panicky. Who wants to have his reward now for this short period of time on earth, lose his entire Gan Eden? So he dropped the flowers, shook his coat out. He should have no trace of these flowers left. And he ran from there. When he came home, he found that his coat was damp. Still had some of that trace of the aroma of these flowers in it. He squeezed out the edge of the coat and what was squeezed out, these few drops, were like a special priceless perfume. It was so precious that he sold this for 13,000 dinarim. He took the money, 13,000 dinarim, for this tiny drop in perfume. But he still took the money. He refused to have any pleasure with this. He gave it to his sons-in-law. He himself would have no pleasure from it whatsoever. Now, imagine what this Reach of Gan Eden is like. And he knew that anything that comes through a miracle means that they deduct from his credits. So as the case of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, who once dreamt that a leg, a golden leg that came from heaven, was his portion of Gan Eden being used up and he had it returned, so too was Rav Baravuha anxious to get rid of this special gift from Gan Eden. He'd rather live as a pauper here and know that his share in Gan Eden was intact. This is the story in the Gemara. Now, we revert back to the first question. A little more in depth. Let's take the questions that Tosafot brings on this point. First, the question was, aren't you a Kohen? Asked of Eliyahu Hanavi. As a Kohen, how can you go to a cemetery where there are dead bodies, which is a place of Tumah? Now, we have the Gemara here which answers, the answer was that this was a cemetery of Goyim. Tosafot asks, first, one question. If we accept this fact, that Eliyahu Hanavi was a Kohen, then we have the story of Eliyahu Hanavi. Let's get the story very clear. It's a Navi, because every part of the story is pertinent now. Hashem said to Eliyahu Hanavi, there is a famine. You recall that in the days of Ahab, King Ahab, the Jews worshipped idols, and Eliyahu Hanavi issued a decree. He received the rights, the power over rain, through a long series of incidents. With this power, he issued a decree that there will be no more rain until he himself decrees there will be rain. So, without rain, there was famine. Hashem said to the Anavi, go to a certain place, you'll find a woman there, a widow, and there you will have enough to be fed on. He came to this place, he saw this widow, and she recognized him as the famous Eliyahu Hanavi, who was, of course, the greatest tzaddik alive at that time. He said to her, will you feed me? And she said, I have nothing at home. I wish I could give you something. He said, I want some bread. She said, all I have is a tiny pitcher of a drop of oil in that pitcher, and a spoonful of flour. That is all. And that's the last of the food I have in the house. I was about to bake that into a little cookie, enough to divide between myself and my small child. And the enemy said to her, good. Take that pitcher and that spoonful, that jug, flour and oil, and start baking. But when you bake, first give me a cookie, and then make one for yourself and your son. I come first. Which means, obviously, one of two things. He is a Kohen. The Kohen receives priority, receives first. Of course, he told her that if she does this, she'll be blessed that there'll be no shortage. This oil and flour will never end until the famine is over. Now she rushed to do this, showing her faith in this tzaddik, and she gave it to him. She was very happy to have Eliyahu Hanavi there to be able to serve him. The biggest mitzvah in the Torah is to be able to serve a tzaddik. A short time later, her child passed away. She came to Eliyahu Hanavi crying very bitterly, with the claim that he was guilty of the murder of a child indirectly. Indirectly, he murdered a child. So because before he came, she was considered the best tzaddikus, best woman, most religious woman in that entire vicinity, and she was guarded by Hashem because of her goodness. Now, in ratio, when he was in her house, compared to him, she was nothing. She was worth nothing. So because she's worth nothing, therefore she was struck by this calamity, this tragedy of her son's death. And that way it means that Eliyahu Hanavi was guilty in killing her son by coming to her house. Eliyahu Hanavi, the Torah says, prayed to Hashem, and he performed the miracle of Tchiyat HaMetim. He brought this child back to life. That's the story of the Navi. And Tosafot asks, the story there says, how did he bring him back to life? He lay upon him, stretched himself out upon this child, breathed into him, and the child came back to life. So Tosafot asks, if or since Eliyahu Hanavi was a Kohen, how could he touch the dead body of this child? The Kohen is forbidden to touch a dead body to become Tameh. It's a law in the Torah. Tosavot answers, this was a case of Elianavi being sure of himself. He was very positive of his powers of being able to bring back a dead person to life. He was sure. The Gemara tells, of course, why he was positive about this. He had received the key of Tchiyat HaMetim from Hashem. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin. And therefore, since he was positive, and he knew this was a case of Pikuach Nefesh, in order to save the life of a Jew, it's permissible to break every law of the Torah, except three certain laws, but Shabbat, Yom Kippur, Kashrut, Tum'ah can all be broken in order to save the life of a person. Therefore, in order to save the life of this boy, it was permissible for him to transgress upon the law of a Kohen becoming Tameh. Now, this is no problem. However, another point, though, is, Tosafot says, or another reason for this, let's say, another reason that permitted Eliyahu HaNavi to do this was that, actually, the Midrash says that this woman became mentally affected by the loss of a child. And she came to Eliyahu HaNavi screaming, the reason the child died is because a sin was committed. You came to my house, you attacked me, and because this was an illegal relation, therefore the sin brought about the death of my child. Eliyahu HaNavi was shocked by this. He prayed to Hashem, help me. I can't blame the woman for making a statement like that. It's an outright lie and a disgraceful statement. But she's mentally affected by this tragedy. Let me bring this child back to life so I can stop her from making this claim, because this claim causes a chilul Hashem, a disgrace to religion. And in order to save from chilul Hashem, it is permissible to commit a minor sin. And this is the reason why Eliyahu HaNavi was permitted, as a Kohen, to touch this dead child, to bring him back to life, to save, to avoid this chilul Hashem. People would say disgraceful things about religion, about the tzaddik like Eliyahu HaNavi. This is the second answer. Now we go into a slightly deeper point. Tosafot brings up another item. And here we tie it in with the first statements we made. The Midrash says that the story here was an entirely different one, completely different from what we said until now. Abba Bar Avuha met Eliyahu HaNavi, but he was not in a cemetery of Goyim. He met him carrying a body. This was the body of Rabbi Akiva. No one dared to bury Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, this great mitzvah, Eliyahu HaNavi came himself to bury Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Bar Avuha asked him, how come that you as a Kohen are touching this body? It may be even Rabbi Akiva, but still it's a matter of breaking a law of the Torah. Midrash says that Eliyahu HaNavi answered him, the reason is that a tzaddik, when he passes away, is not considered dead in the full sense of the word. A dead body, a dead person is tameh. A tzaddik is always called alive. Therefore, tzaddikim b'mitatam kruyim chayim. Tzaddikim in their death are still called alive. Therefore, a tzaddik is not tameh even when he is dead. His body is not mitameh. Proof of this we find, the Gemara says in Ketubot, when Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin, when he passed away, the Gemara says that day, batla kuhuna, the laws of Kohen became nullified and void. All Kohanim went to the funeral of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Again, because he was a tzaddik, and there's no din of tumah with a tzaddik. This is the reason why the graves of certain tzaddikim, very great tzaddikim, are considered permissible for Kohanim to visit, like the grave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal, the Midon, the grave of Rabbeinu Zal. Kohanim go there, according to most. There are some rabbis who insist that the grave of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Zal should not be visited by Kohanim, and there are some who follow that reasoning, but the majority, though, accept the fact that tzaddikim are pure, and therefore, there's no law of tumah. A kohen can go to their funeral, to their grave. There's no din of tumah involved there at all. So here, Eliyahu HaNavi said, Rabbi Akiva is a tzaddik. There's no law of tumah. I am allowed to bury him. Tosafot says that this is the origin for those who say, who disclaim the permission for a Kohen to go to the grave of a Tzaddik. Tosafot says that we find in the Midrash this reasoning was not what Eliyahu HaNavi meant. He just said this to push aside the question of Rabba Ravuha, because actually this was no question at all. Rabbi Akiva was a bet mitzvah. Bet mitzvah means a dead person who has no one to bury him. It's a mitzvah for anyone to take him and bury him, even a Kohen Gadol. Therefore, Eliyahu HaNavi was certainly permitted to take the body of Rabbi Akiva to bury him. There was no question of permission for him to become tamei. However, the Midrash goes further. This is a surprising statement. Midrash says that Eliyahu HaNavi said, his answer was, "You are mistaken." This is the explosive one. "You are mistaken because I am not a Kohen. I am not Pinchas. I am not a Kohen. I am a descendant of Rachel. The Kohenim come from the tribe of Levi, which come from Leah." And he said, "I come from Rachel Imenu, from the tribe of Binyamin, Yosef and Binyamin. Therefore, I am not a Kohen at all, and that's why I can go to the cemetery or I can touch a body of a dead person." So now the question was, Rabba Ravuha asked Eliyahu HaNavi, "You say you are not a Kohen. Isn't it true that you brought the child of this woman back to life, and you said to this woman, 'Bake a cookie for me first'? Now, why did you say, 'Bake a cookie for me first'? Didn't you say that because you are a Kohen, because as a Kohen you're supposed to receive first priority? What other reason could you have had?" Eliyahu HaNavi answered, "I am not a Kohen. I am a descendant of Rachel, and I had a very important reason for asking to receive the cookie first. I said to the woman, 'Bake a cookie for me, and then for the child,' because this child that died, this child that I brought back to life, who was this child? This child was Mashiach ben Yosef. And I said that to show, to teach a lesson for the future, as the Gemara says, that before the coming of Mashiach, first Eliyahu HaNavi would come to proclaim the coming of Mashiach. Therefore I said, first me, then the child." This was a hint for the future. I would come first. The special day, the enemy would come to announce the coming of Mashiach. I would come first, and then this child, who was Mashiach ben Yosef. And this, the Zohar Kadosh tells us, that the Yizal says, this child was, what was his actual name? Yonah ben Amittai. The prophet Yonah, who had, as a child, he died, the enemy brought him back to life. He was called Yonah ben Amittai. His father wasn't Amittai. Amittai means Emet. The enemy was called the Navi Emet. So since he brought back this child to life, this prophet Yonah was called Ben Amittai, the son of this Navi, prophet of truth, who was actually the Neshama of Mashiach ben Yosef. This was the lesson that the enemy taught by asking for the cookie being baked for him first. Now, we come to another interesting point, a point that revolves around this item. As we have here, this statement, there's still something strange about it. The fact that we have a sort of debate. One place we learn that Eliyahu HaNavi was Pinchas, was a Kohen. Here the Midrash says that he was a descendant of Rachel, which means he was from the tribe of Benjamin. Seems to be a very great difference of opinion. How do we coincide these two? First, we find in the Shulchan Aruch, we're not speaking any words of Kabbalah now at all. We're speaking words of Gemara. And now the actual din in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer. There the Bet Shmuel, Darkei Moshe, Rama, Maril bring up this question. Eliyahu HaNavi, who passed away, but not like ordinary humans. He did not die. He rose up to heaven in this fiery chariot without experiencing death or burial, went straight to heaven. Or Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the one who stole the sword of the angel of death, went directly to Gan Eden, never died. But the din asks, the case of these two, what happens to their wives? Is their wife considered a widow? Is she permitted to marry as though her husband had actually died? Or do we consider these husbands as though they never died, but if he went to heaven alive, he's not dead, and therefore his wife cannot remarry? This is the question that's brought up. And the majority of poskim say that they are considered as having passed away, though there was no actual death physically, but they did leave this world, therefore the wives are considered widows, they can remarry. And of course the din says this, just in case we ever happen to have another tzaddik as great as them, Bishum and Levi, we have to know this law. His wife should know the law. So it pertains to us to know about this. The Mashal disagrees with this point. He says that it is forbidden for the wife to marry. Why? Because the husband, Eliyahu HaNavi, is not considered dead. He's considered alive. As long as her husband is alive, she cannot remarry. Now he says, I have clear proof to this law from the story in the Gemara we just learned. The story states here that Abba Avuha asked Eliyahu HaNavi, you are a Kohen, what are you doing in the cemetery? Now we know the Gemara says, Lametim Chavshi, a person is bound by law only during the time he is alive. Once a person dies, there are no more mitzvot for him as far as he's concerned. A person can perform mitzvot while he's alive, and therefore the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot that 1 hour of life in this world is worth more than the eternity of Gan Eden, the other world. Because no matter how good Gan Eden is, you cannot do mitzvot there. You can receive reward, but there's no chance of mitzvot. You have your chance only while you're alive, and take advantage of that opportunity every second that you can. Once a person dies, he is exempt from mitzvot. There's no chance of doing mitzvot. Therefore, there's a question of whether you're allowed to put tzitzit on the garment of a person in a coffin, and so on, because there are no mitzvot possible for that person to perform. Now, in the case of Eliyahu HaNavi, if we would say, the Mashal says, this is very logical reasoning, if we would say that he was considered dead where his wife could remarry, how could he be asked the question, what are you doing on a cemetery as a Kohen? The law is, law of Torah, that a Kohen cannot become Tameh in a cemetery. If he was dead, he's not bound by any laws. In fact, he was asked this question, proves that he is considered alive, therefore his wife cannot remarry. This is the statement of the Mashal. Now we come back to the vital question, most important of all, for which there is no answer found in the Gemara, and which is hinted at very slightly in the Zohar Kadosh, and Midrash leaves us with this big problem. Who was Eliyahu HaNavi? We have conflicting statements. One says that he was Pinchas. We have proof of the fact that he inherited the souls of Nadav and Avihu. He transferred these to Elisha and Avi. He was a Kohen, as is mentioned so many times in the Gemara. On the other hand, the Midrash says, Befeirush, that he claimed he was the descendant of Rachel. This wasn't an idle claim. He said, look, in the Navi, in Devarei HaYamim, you'll find in Befeirush, it says there, descendants of Rachel and Binyamin was Eliyahu. The Rizal says that it is true. This is a point we have to understand, accept lightly, not to discuss deeply, just to close the issue with this point, that Eliyahu HaNavi was a combination of a number of nishamot. He was that great that actually he was originally an angel in heaven, came down to earth as a person, and here he had a combination of souls. It's a manner of merging, fusing different souls, combination of the soul of a Kohen and descendant of Rachel, Binyamin. Now, therefore, the statements about him being Pinchas with Elisha HaNavi are all true. The statement he made to the rabbis about him being the descendant of Binyamin, coming before Mashiach ben Yosef, too, is true. One revelation that Ezal tells